Yeah, but tonight I'm delighted to welcome back to Many Rivers and Books and Tea, Sandy Eastoak, who is a local poet, artist, and she is the author of this new book, Rhymes with Pillow, which I highly recommend. It is a beautiful, beautiful book, just a wonderful book. She also did the cover. Sandy also did the cover. Sandy has been a great advocate of Many Rivers Books and Tea, and she's also one of the founders of the Sebastopol Gallery in the next block. Yeah? Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a wonderful poet. I've had many long discussions with her about poetry and painting and Sebastopol, and it's a delight to have you here once again at Many Rivers. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Chad. And thank all of you for being here tonight. It's cold and rainy. So my first question for you is, how many of you think a book that's all about willows in poetry form is exciting? There's a story to how I happened to be doing a book like this. And the story goes back a ways when I was doing a Crown of Sonnets. It was my third Crown of Sonnets about plants. And the second Crown of Sonnets I did, which was about animals, I had dedicated to my older daughter, and kids being what they are, I had to dedicate the next one to my younger daughter. So I said to her, "Well, honey, I'm dedicating this book to you." And she said, "Well, then, there had better be sword ferns in it." Well, there weren't. And at that point, I had like two slots that weren't written. And I go, I was going to have to take out the willow sonnet to put in a sword fern sonnet. Well, there's this group of willows down in Regal Park that is a source of friendship and solace and guidance for me. So it wasn't just any old poem I was going to have to substitute. It was the poem. So I go down to Regal, and I walk down by this willow grove, and I'm just sort of hanging out there. And I don't know how many of you are inclined to have conversations with trees, but if you are, you probably do something similar to me, which is sort of put out the question and really get still and wait for something to come up that isn't me. And what came up was, "Well, that's fine as long as you write a whole book about us." Well, it seemed reasonable at the time, and your good friends ask you for something that seems possible, you say yes, right? So I'd already written a poem about willows, which was actually the beginning of my relationship with this particular grove. And I think I might start with reading that one. This is, it's not much of a form. It's a quatrain, and that just means it's in four-line verses. And other than that, it's pretty formless. It's called Gifts. She leans against the willow trunk, her hands soft on the bark, caressing, respectful. Rain rings on the slow water, jump a little higher as she begins to sing. New leaves stretch their bright unfolding toward her throaty syllables. From her mouth and hands, praise rises of willow and water and wind. Catkins keep time. Fog damp breeze dances slowly, slowly. So what happened the day that I wrote that poem, or the day that I experienced what that poem was about, was the first time I had been there and I'd kind of felt the presence of these trees, the presence of something timeless and very wise. And it kind of entered into a relationship and felt it was reciprocal, that I would put something out that I received, and there was a kind of communication going on. And that was just the very beginning of going down to this particular grove often and feeling amazing stuff. I think I'll read you Solace. This is a blank verse, which is what Shakespeare wrote. It's iambic pentameter, five beats to a line, but it doesn't rhyme. Also, I think I failed to mention so far this evening that this book became a book of forms. That the gifts poem, you know, I wasn't really thinking about form at that time. Somewhere between when I got this sense I needed to write a whole book and when I actually started working on it, I had written a villanelle that was about willows, which I'll read you shortly. But I'm going to, anyway, it just became a study in poetic form. So there are 25 different forms in here. Some of them are difficult, some of them are easy. Two of them are my own. Some of them are long, some are short. Anyway, this is blank verse, and it's called Solace. I walk among the willows when I'm sad. I speak to them as to a trusted friend. I hold their furrowed bark between my hands. I stroke their curve of trunk and scan their limbs. Against the sky, they etch their soothing lines. Their shapes and shadows quell my bitter thoughts. Their counsel pleases me. I hope I can reflect it well within the human realm. The view that willows see, extending past the dell, beyond the wooded hill, is not ideal. They know our foibles and our strife. They sense the danger fabricated by our fear, our ignorance, our stinking pride. They feel the loss of species, melting ice, the poisoned soil, polluted streams and seas. And yet, they welcome any one of us. Both flexible and strong, they heal our wounds with beauty, silence, and a steadfast grace. Like Wendell Berry, they consider all the facts, and yet are joyous, giving smart compassion as they stand and root and stretch. I thank them with an offering of corn and sing them primal syllables as love. I don't have a particular plan for the order I'm going to do things in. I hope it will evolve with some kind of rhyme or reason. I think I'd like to read you the villanelle. That's the it's the first poem in the book called The Willows. Yeah?
What's a
villanelle? A villanelle, I'm going to have to look at my thing in the back. It's a 19-line form with 5 3-line stanzas followed by a 4-line stanza. There are 2 refrains and 2 repeating rhymes. The first and third line of the first 3-line stanza are repeated alternately until the last stanza, which ends with both. So because of all the repetitions, it's a little bit tricky. And when I was playing with the forms, I actually found the ones with repetitions to be the most interesting in many cases. The willows. The willows bend along the creek. Leaves flicker brightly in the air. They're quiet. Is the love we seek. The breezes through their branches speak the gentle longing of a prayer. The willows bend along the creek. Some rubbing branches softly squeak within a stillness quite aware. Their quiet is the love we seek. Some trunks are furrowed, some are sleek. 3 salix species thrive and share. The willows bend along the creek. Among their roots, dark waters leak and eddy where their branches flare. Their quiet is the love we seek. Against their bark I rest my cheek. How strongly now I feel them care. The willows bend along the creek. Their quiet is the love we seek. So some of these poems are quite serious, and I didn't want it to be too serious, which is one of the reasons I chose the title, Rhymes with Pillow. I thought that kind of lightened it up a little bit. But it also implies, you know, the rhymes part implies that there's going to be some form going on. Another way that I lightened it up was I included some limericks. And this is a limerick that actually has the pillow rhyme in it. Johnny lay under a willow. Of hiking, he'd sure had his fill, oh. He fell fast asleep and was soon dreaming deep with his cheek on a root as his pillow. And so a limerick in itself tends to be kind of a joke, and this is kind of a joke, but it's also an important pointer to what the whole book is about, because here's this human being, he's out in nature, wears himself out, and the willows give him rest. And that's kind of the whole drift of this, is there we are, we're wearing ourselves out in the world, and the willows give us rest. I think I'll go to the other limerick, which until the rain was beginning to seem not so funny. There once was a willow-lined creek. The flow of its water was weak. On a hot summer day, it wasted away, leaving a brown, muddy streak. Mm-hmm. I went down to the willows today. I'd been down there a couple of weeks ago, and it was absolutely painful. I stood in the center of this kind of ring of trees, where usually I would just feel this whole wonderful willow presence enfolding me, and it was like it was withdrawn and just painful. And I went down there today, and it's joyful again. Do any of you have a favorite form that might be in here?
I'm not sure if it'll be in there, and I just got acquainted with it this summer. It's called Syncoin.
I have one.
Oh.
Somewhere.
Syncoin.
Mm-hmm. And it's actually one that that Jim is fond of. And the explanation that I have in here, it's a five-line poem. The first line is two syllables, the second is four syllables, the third is six syllables, the fourth is eight syllables, and the last line is back to two syllables. And this one is called Equinox. Willows stretch their branches in gentle breeze and sun. Yellow-green baby leaves unfold. Ah, spring. Yeah.
So who invents all these forms? Could I just invent a form and call it something?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Some of them are very old. A lot of them come from like troubadour forms when, you know, traveling troubadours went around singing poems.
Right.
Like the ballad is one of those, but there are other ones as
What's
well.
A ballad?
Well, I haven't had one. A ballad, it can go on and on and on, but it has four-line verses, and the rhyme scheme, well, it doesn't, not all the lines necessarily rhyme, but the second and fourth lines rhyme. The first and third may or may not. So it's, but anyway, it's, and it tells a story. And this one, the story that I wanted to tell was the diversity of willows around the world. So, and for reasons that I absolutely cannot explain, it is called Ephron. There are willows growing far away and willows growing near. Willows grow by toxic mud and by wild waters clear. A boy named Ephron caught the scent of willows' wide extent. At 12, he went a-traveling with a cook stove and a tent. He started where the boxcars roar along a slimy ditch, some scraggly willows bent to hold beauty with a stitch. He left the railroad tracks to climb a trail through twisted hills, found lithe and golden willows where mountain water spills. For weeks, he traveled north until he came to Arctic lands, where willows trace the water's curves among the snows and sands. And then he traded northern lights for crowded cities' glow. In concrete canyons, willows cheer the captive water's flow. Then Ephron climbed beyond the lights, explored the mountains dark, where every alpine stream was lit with willows' brilliant spark. He followed the crystal waters down into valleys low and lush, where willows widen their embrace and make the rivers blush. He relaxed a while and then moved on toward drier lands and hard, where every seep and trickle has its desert willow guard. He wandered in strange countries where people speak strange sounds, and everywhere were willows whose diversity astounds. And when he tired of travel, and for his home he yearned, to old Atascadero Creek his heart and steps returned. For here the waters of his youth meander slow and strong, and willows rise so thickly with their willow smell and song. Ephron walks here every day. Sometimes he sits and thinks, guided by the willows, who can answer any sphinx. Their wisdom and their gentleness he's touched in every land. Their gift to all creation he has come to understand. There are willows growing far away, and willows growing near. Willows grow by toxic mud and by wild waters clear.
Sandy, did you try a Sestina?
I did. So a Sestina is a 39-line poem with a strict repetition of the 6 end words of the first stanza through the remaining 6-line stanzas, culminating in a 3-line envoi containing the same 6 words. And this one is probably kind of the most over-the-top for interspecies friendships. It's called Love Affair. I ate my lunch among the willows, chewing shyly like a timid lover on the brink of intimate touch. Those 2 big trunks creaked in the wind, sounding like a minute from breaking, as they have for many a moon. Above the leaves, a quarter moon squinted down at the willows. The wispy clouds were breaking softly to show the sky as lover, stroked by a gentle wind, quivering blue at her touch. I stretched my hand to touch silvery leaves waving at the moon. My hair moved in the wind, dancing in parallel with willows, who whispered to me like a lover. The crust of culture was breaking. My fears and rules were breaking, melting under the confident touch of my swaying, rooted lover. Knowing the rituals of the moon, these wise and playful willows were changing colors in the wind. We raised the song of the wind from mouth and branches breaking, I and the beautiful willows. They buzzed under my touch, my cheek on their bark. The moon gazed on the waltzing trees and lover. All afternoon, the glow of lover followed me like a tireless wind, carrying sweet smell of the moon. A secret smile kept breaking, while my skin still felt the touch of whispering, shimmering willows. My lover's murmurs are still breaking patterns in a wind of feral touch. With moon as witness, I kiss willows. You missed the calmer stuff. So any other forms anybody's interested in? Then I think I will go to the two. There are 2 short forms that I made up. One of them I didn't really mean to make up. It was actually a poem that I wrote in about 73 that kind of would return to me, and in recent years it returned often, and I really liked it. And it was called On the Brink of Something, and I'll try to remember it. The lost feeling of standing alone, a moment away from insight all revealing, deep as bone, the wish to stray into that light. So it's just 8 lines, and the rhyme scheme is A, B, C, D, A, B, C, D. And I thought, well, why shouldn't that just be a form? So I decided to call it Brink and write some. And I think I've got 2 of them in here. This is a spring one called Harbinger. The willows lean into the breeze, their catkins swell. A yellow haze precedes the green, a gentle tease that beckons well our summer days. And October, yellow falling, swiftly lighting, leaf of willow on the river, scrub jay calling, wind is biting, white caps billow, towhees shiver. So it's a small, kind of compact. The other one kind of came in some sort of weather, and it just seemed like it would be a nice thing to repeat. I don't remember what that original poem was, but I call the form Little Moth. It's partly visual, so it has a longer line, two shorter lines, and a longer line again, so it's sort of moth-shaped. And then the rhythm of it, it has, each of the lines have, what are the things that have, anapest and dactyl, is that it? The ones that have three syllables to a beat, so it flutters. So it's partly the shape and partly the flutter. This one is called Storm. The silvery bottoms of leaves turn upside down in blustery wind. The willows gleam white in the clouds. And this one is called Sharp Notes. Hidden in billowy leaves, a petulant bird repeatedly chirps, disturbing the willowy calm. If I look at some other short ones for a moment. One of the ones that I found was a nice form was the lantern, is that how you say it? Which it's a five-line poem. The first line is one syllable, the second two, the third three, the four, and the fifth goes back to one. So I think it's called that, you know, like the little moth, it's a shape. It's like this little Chinese lantern shape.
Well, it's like half of that other form. Instead of 2, 4, 6, 8,
yeah.
And two. It's
yeah. Well, Jim is really the master of these little syllabic thingies.
Little syllabic thingies. That's wonderful.
Technical term.
Right. Those short poetry forms that are dictated by the number of syllables. That's what I meant.
Well, I like the other way.
Okay. We'll call it poetic license then. So the first one, I'm going to read you two lanterns. One is called Flies. Flies, raucous, annoying, among willows, buzz. And this is a spring one. Green they shine, willow leaves reborn again, spring.
Say this. If you have any inclination to read, to repeat a poem.
Yes.
Right after you read it.
Yes.
Please indulge yourself.
I will. And if any of you want me to repeat a poem and I haven't indulged myself, indulge yourself. Yes?
The one you just read, could you read that?
Green, they shine, willow leaves, reborn again, spring. And here's a funny one called a Kinzane, Kanzane? Quinzane?
Say that word again?
Quinzane, maybe? It's a Q word. It's an unrhymed verse of 15 syllables. There are 7 syllables in the first line, 5 in the second, and 3 in the third. The first line makes a statement, and the next two lines ask a question about the statement. By the water, willows grow. What of summer's drought? Roots stay wet? I'm going to do that one again. By the water, willows grow. What if summer's drought? Roots stay wet? What?
Sorry if I ask a question.
Absolutely.
The form, I wondered if the forms led you into certain observations. You know, like if the forms were helpful in focusing you in certain ways about the willow.
Absolutely.
Could you talk a little bit about
that? Well, I first found this out when I was working on A Crown of Sonnets, which is a very complex puzzle of a thing to do. And what I found that was, rather than being constricted, it was like sticking a pipe down in the ground and water gushing out. And so it just seems like the forms, they kind of trim off my egoistic kind of perceptions and prejudices and whatever I thought before, and freshen everything up. It's just like fresh air coming into the whole mix, and needing to respond to the form kind of makes me hunt for something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we will depart the short forms for a moment and show you a real example of hunting for something. The hardest one that I found to work with is called the Pantoum. And it was like riding a bull in a rodeo. So this is a poem made of a series of quatrains, which are just four-line verses. The second and fourth lines of each stanza are repeated as the first and third lines of the next, continuing for any number of stanzas. Then the first and third lines of the last stanza are the second and fourth of the next to last. The first line of the poem is also the last line, and the third line of the first stanza is the second line of the last stanza. So what happens is you've got these just constant repetitions, and you're hopeful that even though the lines are repeated, that the second time, the second verse they appear in, the meaning's a little bit different, so it doesn't just bog down in complete boredom. But the other thing is, it's like, it really is like a big animal with a will of its own going somewhere, and you keep trying to bring it back to where it meets those first lines again. Hoi, yoi. And it also has to do with hunting in another sense. It's called By the Creek. So many creatures make willows their home. Small tracks and large weave and bend along the creek's sandy wet loam, where the roots start and the waters end. Small tracks and large weave and bend. Patterns of coming and going are clear. Where the roots start and the waters end, hands of raccoon and hooves of deer. Patterns of coming and going are clear. Where even crickets leave tiny marks, hands of raccoon and hooves of deer astound like giants, wild and stark. Where even crickets leave tiny marks, the prints of heron and Canada geese astound like giants, wild and stark. But the paw of cougar breaks the peace. The prints of heron and Canada geese, we feel the joy in nature's charm. But the paw of cougar breaks the peace. We feel like rabbit, a prey's alarm. We feel the joy in nature's charm, with small creatures eluded with ease. We feel like rabbit, a prey's alarm, with hunters whom our flesh might please. With small creatures eluded with ease, we love to share the willow's shade. With hunters whom our flesh might please, our love subsides and we're afraid. We love to share the willow's shade with deer and towhees and butterflies. Our love subsides and we're afraid with cougars and storms and dark surprise. With deer and towhees and butterflies, we feel our oneness with every creature. With cougars and storms and dark surprise, we shiver before a sharper teacher. We feel our oneness with every creature among the willows on sunny days. We shiver before a sharper teacher on windy nights when shadows sway. Among the willows on sunny days, we scan at leisure for track and sign. On windy nights when shadows sway, unknown sounds jitter our spine. We scan at leisure for track and sign. With hidden life, the willows thrill. Unknown sounds jitter our spine. Even the quiet is never still. With hidden life, the willows thrill. Along the creek's sandy wet loam, even the quiet is never still. So many creatures make willows their home. So I ended up happy with it.
Yeah.
But it was a ride.
Did you really find sea cougars prints?
I've seen bobcats tracks. I haven't seen cougars, but I'm aware that they could be there because people have spotted them near there.
Over
at Rigel. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Really?
So,
it's a secret.
Yeah. So sometimes when I'm down there alone, you know, I'm just kind of going, yeah. I mean, I'd love to see one, and I would not like to be attacked by one, so. But I'd also I don't know if it was before or after, but around the same time, I'd gone out to Bodega Dunes with a really wonderful guy, Jim Sullivan, who does a tracking class. I highly recommend it. It's like you learn stuff that you just never knew.
Jim Sullivan.
Jim Sullivan, yeah. And I think you can Google, if you Google Jim Sullivan tracking, you can get to his website. But when I went out there with him, very early on, he's teaching you both actual tracks and scat, but also bird language, because so much information comes from what the birds are up to. So we'd been out there about half an hour, and some crows were making a whole lot of racket far, you know, kind of distant from us. And he wanted us to just sort of think, well, what might that be about? And I decided to risk it and say the first stupid thing that came into my mind, because sometimes it's meaningful. I said, what I get is cougar. And he said, well, that really could be. But, you know, there's no way to verify it. But they were clearly worked up about something. And he said, maybe it wasn't a cougar. Maybe it was a bobcat. But probably your intuition is at least in the right ballpark.
So they're like, crows are like blue jays. If there's a trespasser in their territory, they will squawk and stuff.
Yeah. 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 So, anyway.
Do you have a sonnet?
I do. Well, I have, of course I have a sonnet. I have the sonnet, but in fact, what I'd like to do is read the sonnet about the sword ferns that took the place and got me into this mess in the first place. Because what I decided to do, like, part of the way A Crown of Sonnets works is the last line becomes the first and the first becomes the last. And I wanted, when I did the Willow sonnet, to use the same first and last lines. So I wanted to read this so you could hear that happened. So this is the sword fern. A weighted silence shimmers like a prayer along the quiet creek where sword ferns cloak the bank. They hold the soil as drizzles soak from autumn clouds come kindly to repair the strain of heat and drought. The sword ferns line the trails meandering through trunks and logs. Their fronds explore the cool and drifting fogs. Green lobes twist lightly round a limber spine. The undersides are stitched with fertile nubs, brown sori, packed with spores. When breezes stroke their surface softly, generations back are lured to coming times. The future rubs a distant past when ferny life awoke with nimble curves of green and tender slack. September. A weighted silence shimmers like a prayer where willows rise and turn along the creek. In wind, two older trunks collide and squeak while younger branches whisper in the air. An autumn gust shakes loose some yellow leaves and sends them spinning upward first, then down, like fading garlands torn from summer's gown. Through slender twigs a fattened spider weaves a fresh and perfect web. A crow sails past. A woolly bear approaches on the ground among the grasses parted by the track of deer. A jay lands with a comic blast. The patient willows, these events surround with nimble curves of green and tender slack. So you could just slide it back in. Another form that I got kind of excited about and felt a certain accomplishment when I did it is called Ottava Rima. And this is one that can be any number of stanzas.
Can you say the
name of it? Ottava Rima.
Is that does that have a specific meaning, or is that like a name like Steve, Karen?
No, what it means is it's the name of the stanza, and you can have as many of the stanzas as you want. So it can be a short, it can be an 8-line poem or a 800-line poem, whatever. But the stanza is a rhyming stanza with 8 iambic lines. So that's one unstressed syllable followed by an accented syllable, like in Shakespeare. And the rhyme scheme is A, B, A, B, A, B, C, C. And you'll get familiar with that because this one has 6 stanzas.
I think I'm going to want you to read this twice.
Well, we'll see.
Okay.
And this one explores a little more of the invisible. It's called Kachina. There's a low place where the willows by the creek stand together like a council or a church. I go there for comfort when I'm tired or bleak, or when shifting mystery compels a search. A sweet or stark disquiet demands I seek some change of thought or stance, or the times I lurch from betrayal, disillusionment, or grief. Their sacred presence always provides relief. Giving sanctuary, those tall willows stand. I'm quiet among them as my feet take root. Energy runs through my spine from sky to land. Soon my jaded senses become more acute. Furrows in the bark and little bugs command avid attention. Then, like a mythic flute, a bird is praising life. His song is fervent balm, forgetting self. I enter communal calm. Sometimes walking among these willows, I sense a sly and vital presence I cannot see. Scanning the invisible, my eyes grow tense. I know it's there, feel its strange intensity. Fresh and warming currents curl the air more dense, now here, now there. Clearly, someone's here with me. I taste power, shifting, neutral, maybe kind. It moves vividly, yet hidden, like I'm blind. Within these willows, some ancient spirit goes. As I wonder who it is, I close my eyes. Then I see his circle mouth and lightning nose, his eyes like slits, a pattern cape. I surmise he's Kachina of the water. He bestows rain, fog, eddies of the creek. Soft mists arise where he steps. Slow, magical, I watch him wade. Soft ripples lap the muddy edge of the glade. Does he make his home among the willows here? Or does he visit when he's confused or sad? I'd imagine spirits always strong and clear. Maybe every being has good days and bad. A water Kachina may have much to fear. Pollution, dams, and dredging may drive him mad. Disbelief that his existence could be real, even disembodied, he might need to heal. To the willows, water Kachina may come for medicine, while bringing wet health to them. The trees and the grass dance to his liquid drum. The animals drink and sigh, grateful to him. I wonder if I too harmonize the hum, interplay of creatures, curve of trunk and limb. Each giving to all within this woody ring, our joys are multiplied, hearing willows sing. That one, I don't. You might have heard that the lines in it are counted by syllables rather than by meter. So for me, it's a little arrhythmic. I usually gravitate toward the more rhythmic kind of things. But that was the one of it. And this is the Water Kachina on the cover.
Sandy, I didn't understand what you meant when you said they're counted by syllables, not by meter.
Oh, like every line has the same number of syllables, but it doesn't necessarily have a pattern of accents.
Okay, so the accent pattern, even though the number of...
Yeah. While a rhythmic line, it may fudge on the syllables, but the beats will be consistent.
Yeah, but in this you may mix up the iambic, the trochaic.
Yeah, so when I read it, there are always places where I feel a little bit lost because I'm more of the,
But it's your
foot tapper.
On what to do there.
Yeah, I think that the whatever I read, it gave a number of syllables. Not as the only way you could do it, but I decided to do it that way. So my option was to do something that doesn't come as easily to me or as naturally. So
no, but within that form, you
mm-hmm.
can choose to.
Yeah, you can.
You can make it.
I think
work.
You can, yeah. I don't know, it depends. I mean, a lot of these forms, it depends on whose definition you read,
uh-huh.
how much latitude you have. Some of them you never get latitude, but some you do. Yeah. Does that seem correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Short answer.
Correct.
Well, I wouldn't mind taking questions at any point, you know. Yeah.
Can you remind me of the reading that I came to, and you created the crown? Was it called a
crown of sonnets? Yeah.
And you had three books that were in that, right?
I ended up with four.
With four?
Yeah, and they're
Can
there's
you describe that form and how you accomplished that briefly?
Well, first of all, the local poet Hale Thatcher introduced me to the concept of Crown of Sonnets. And what it is 15 sonnets, and the first 14 are linked, so the last line of the first is the first line of the second, so the last line of the 14th is the first line of the first. And the 15th is all 14 first lines in order. And when he told me that, I said, oh, wow, what a great metaphor for continuity in painting. And I thought, oh, but I won't really get it. You know, I won't get it in my body unless I write one. And nobody had told me it was hard, so so I wasn't worried about it, and I just set out to do one. He and I had been having a conversation about whether poetry and art makes any difference in the big environmental mess. So that first one I wrote, that was the topic.
That's right.
Yeah, and it's actually, it's kind of grim, but not totally grim. And one of the reasons that it's kind of grim is that a sonnet, it tends to have eight lines that kind of go in a direction and then the last six kind of turn. And I thought that the most reasonable way to write this crown thingy was to write the last verse first. So the first eight lines are kind of grim, and then the last six are kind of, you know, how we improve things. Well, unfortunately, that means the first eight poems are about how messed up everything is, and then it gets a little bit more optimistic with the last six. So and then the next one I did on animals, kind of from their own experience. The next one was plants, and then the last one, it was the same kind of thing as happened with the willows, where I was, you know, finishing work on the third one, and I go in my kitchen, and there's this spider on the counter that, instead of like running away, comes running straight for me, and kind of goes, and I, you know, like it wants to say something, And it felt like it was saying, you know, we want one about us lowly guys that nobody likes. And I'm thinking, oh God, I'm really losing it, you know. And then the next evening, I'm brushing my teeth before bed, and this little moth comes in, flying right in my face, you know. It's kind of like, okay, I'll do it. So there's, they're kind of mixed between.
And you had a cougar in that.
Huh?
You had a cougar in that one.
No, the cougar's in the animal one. The cougar, you know, they're a big, lovely animal. The
right.
Last one, it's got, besides the spider and the moth, obviously, it's got like Amanita mushroom and limpets and slime things,
small.
You know, worms, beetles.
Oh, okay.
Sandy?
Yeah.
Are the poems that you're just finished talking about, the ones about the environment and poetry,
mm-hmm.
are they published works that are still available?
Yeah.
Yep, they're over there.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just
That's a lovely question. Thank you. Any other? Yeah.
So, is there some directory of poetic form somewhere?
There is a book called A Handbook of there is one, and I'm not sure what the title is. Do you know the title?
Book of Forms by Turco. Turco.
Yeah. But you can also go online, and there are lots of different poetry sites that will give you most of them, or you know, different sites will give you different ones. It's not as exhaustive as that book, but I was aware of the book, but I mostly got my information online.
I ran into a form that I couldn't understand, but I finally realized that the message was the last half of the preceding stanza and the first half of the next one, and it had a split in the a space in between, and it was really, I was reading this, I couldn't understand it, and then I finally figured it out.
Yeah.
It was really weird for me.
Yeah. Do you know what that is?
No.
Yeah.
But the thought was not all in one stanza, it was divided.
Mm-hmm. What's that? This is not. This isn't about necessarily going to make sense why that reminded me of that. But there is what is it called? Rondo, I think. You know the poem in Flanders Field. That is one of the thing I'm looking for. Isn't that a rondo? Yeah, it's a rondo. And it's kind of, it has repetitions, it's kind of split. Not split in the dramatic way you just described, but that's where I'm going, because I don't know where else to go. What do you ask? What do you ask of willows? Silver net of shimmering leaves, tangle of roots wet in swirling waters of the wandering brook, a scatter of yellow where the wind shook autumn payment for the summer's debt. When billowing clouds hesitate and fret, their branches whisper to the rain, not yet. They gather thunder in each curve and crook. What do you ask of willows? When impatient cumulonimbus sweat and groan within the coming storm's chill jet, these jaunty trees compel a brighter look, flashing gold and glitter that they took before the dark. Through them the sun shines yet. What do you ask of willows? Yeah.
I wasn't sure if you were going to read something, but I wanted to ask if you would read the haikus in there, and
mm-hmm.
also to ask your opinion, because when I was writing a lot of haikus, you know, I was pretty careful about doing the 5-7-5 pattern. And then as I got more into researching worldwide haikus, there seemed to be more latitude, and you realize there's translations from the Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that changed my form, but I'm still kind of close here. adherent to the 575, but not a strict adherent.
Yeah.
I was just wondering where you landed with all that.
I tend to land outside of that. Jim and I have, you know, we sort of complement each other in our approach to English haiku. You know, my sense is because a lot of my interest in haiku comes from Zen and from other aspects, you know, like visual arts, I was kind of going more for what felt like an essence and a particular feeling where you want the ego gone, you want some moment of the season, you want some, you know, there's just that little thing that happens in haiku. And that's what I mostly was concerned about. And I felt like the way syllables work in Japanese, they have just more little pieces of sound to create that little essence. And in English, if you're trying to get all those syllables in, sometimes it detracts from... It's wonderful when you get both the syllables and the essence and doesn't detract,
mm-hmm.
but I tend to shave them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see where these are. And I don't think of myself as, you know, a real haiku writer. I think that I haven't worked long and hard enough at it to merit that. Does that make sense? That it's really a spiritual discipline as much as a poetic discipline, and I just don't think I've earned my keep yet. So. But I had to put a couple in anyway. I can find them. And oh, here we go. Okay. Deep blue sky. Shimmering willows, one leaf falls. That's short, I'll do it again. Deep blue sky, shimmering willows, one leaf falls. Rough crisscross bark, feeble winter light is caught without a struggle. Rough crisscross bark, feeble winter light is caught without a struggle. So the second one has more syllables, obviously, than the first, but they seem to me to have the same sort of feeling or weight. There's one other form that I've only written this one. And find where it is, but I'm hoping to explore it more in the future because I really liked it, and that's all I did with it. And it's called a Tetractus, which is a five-line poem. The first line is one syllable, the second has two, the third has three, the fourth has four, and the fifth has 10 syllables. So it's kind of. And this is it. Soft willows whispering under spring light, explicit love stories of dragonflies.
Again?
Soft willows whispering under spring light, explicit love stories of dragonflies. I really am. So it's like I want to work with that form. I mean, maybe I just lucked up with the dragonflies, but I want to play with it some more in the future and see what happens.
What's the name of that form again?
Tetractus. Yeah.
Z?
No.
Sort of like a Latin word.
It seems kind of a Greek. It seems pretty like a mathematical word.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could be Greek.
Yeah, definitely. We've actually been at this a while, haven't we? So I should probably be winding it up soon, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, could you reread the Villa now?
I could. I could, and then what I want to do is just take final questions, and then I have two poems I want to end with, because I kind of want to end with poems rather than stuff. The willows. The willows bend along the creek. Leaves flicker brightly in the air. Their quiet is the love we seek. The breezes through their branches speak the gentle longing of a prayer. The willows bend along the creek. Some rubbing branches softly squeak within a stillness quite aware. Their quiet is the love we seek. Some trunks are furrowed, some are sleek. Three salix species thrive and share. The willows bend along the creek. Among their roots, dark waters leak and eddy where their branches flare. Their quiet is the love we seek. Against their bark I rest my cheek. How strongly now I feel them care. The willows bend along the creek. Their quiet is the love we seek. Any further questions before I wrap it up? Everybody's happy?
Are there some forms that you liked working with more than others?
They were all kind of exciting in a certain way. And I don't think I'll really be able to answer that question until I see what I continue to write in. You know, if there are forms that I return to or not. I've written, probably 5 or 6 villanelles, but that was before I was really engaged in this project. So I'm acquainted with a lot more of them. I don't know what I'm going to do.
I notice you have drawings in there. I'm just curious, did those in the book, those happen as part of the process?
Yes. Yeah, so I would go down to the willow grove and draw down there. And I have a couple of them here. So yeah, the drawings are all from that place. And most of the poems are from that place, but I mentioned, the Ephron one is all over the place. This one, the first of the two that I'm going to finish with, and the form is called a ballade, which is different from a ballad. It's it has 3 8-line stanzas plus a 4-line envoi, all with the same last line. And you'll hear the rhyme scheme. And the last one I'm going to read is a triolet, which has a repetition, simple rhyme scheme and a repetition, which you'll hear. So this one is also not just at Ragel. This one seems to have more to do with the Navarro River. And it's called River. In the dark forest, rivers roar, cutting canyons through the trees. Jagged conifer cliffs soar and fall to soft willow knees. Obstacles of log and stone slow the water's downward dash. Swirling pools where eggs are sown, and baby salmon glint and flash. Under the willows a curving shore eats soft ripples from the breeze. Boatmen cunningly explore quiet eddies at their ease. A heron balances alone, ignores a turtle's sudden splash. She hunts beyond the shallow zone where baby salmon glint and flash. Such loveliness grew long before the centuries of human squeeze. Now we struggle to restore pristine rivers such as these, where the firs and willows have grown lovely, thick, tangled, and brash. Cool, clear waters purl and drone, so baby salmon glint and flash. The willows playfully adore the solemn beauty eagle sees, where water sings a godly tone, the baby salmon glint and flash. This last one is called Haven. Restful, restful, lying under willow trees, delusions of the human world dissolve. The musky smell tells lullabies to breeze. restful, restful, lying under willow trees. Glittering leaves enfold a nest of ease. Here peace and wisdom lucidly evolve. Restful, restful, lying under willow trees. Delusions of the human world dissolve.